This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour, Brock and Salk, is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Pete Carroll will join us in an hour and a half, and never too far away from the biggest story in town today, which unfortunately is the death of Paul Allen. Passes away yesterday, Brock, and here in about 30 minutes, we'll talk about the future of the Seahawks, because contrary to what John Clayton said, I don't know whether it's as simple as his sister Jody simply taking over ownership, and even if it is that, I don't know what that means for the future of the Seahawks and how it will change the legacy of this organization. So, a lot to discuss as it relates to sports fans, in addition to just the incredible sadness for the region. Paul Allen was so much to all of Seattle. I mean, not just those of us who love sports and love the Seahawks. I mean, every time you drive around the city, this idea of a greater versus a lesser Seattle, he's the biggest reason it's greater.
Yeah, I just got this email from a friend of mine, and he said, and I imagine that we're getting a bunch of these texts, and hopefully we can connect with some of you after we chat with Kirk here and game day and everything that's coming to Pullman and hear from some of you. But my buddy just shot me an email and said, you know, I got a chance to see Paul the day that he purchased Hawks, or right around that time, at a Sonics game. Had the opportunity to simply say thanks for saving the Seahawks. It was a cool memory for me. And I know those that it was hard to get obviously close to Paul. You know, you kept a real inner circle of really good friends, a number of them that still work in this building that we sit in here. But for those that did get a chance to say thank you, and I think the heartache of the Sonics over the last decade, you know, kind of further, I don't know, emboldens that belief or that thank you for what he did mean to this community, keep this football team here.
Well, speaking of community, when you start looking at communities around the Seattle area, the Cougar community, Brock, I would say is about as tight-knit and as interesting as any of them, and they're getting pumped. They're shelling out their cash because College Game Day is coming to Pullman, finally. 15 years in the making, and Kirk Herbstreit will be there. He joins us right now here in the Venue Kings Hotline. Kirk, how are you?
I'm great, guys. How you doing?
Are you ready? Are you ready to experience all that is Pullman?
I am fired up, man. I can't wait to get out there. It's been a long time, as you guys know, and we're fired up to finally, after 15 years, finally bring the show out there.
Have you ever been there?
What's that?
Have you ever been to Pullman?
Never. No, I've never been there.
You never went out, even in Leaf's years, huh? Even when Leaf was kind of in the mid to late 90s? No? Interesting.
No. Like when I did the Thursday night package, Tarico and I did it for about 8 years. We never got out there. The Pac-10 back in those days wasn't part of the package. So, no, we got to the Mountain West a lot. But never out there.
You have any idea what you're in store for, Kirk?
No, you got to tell me. Tell me about it. I have no idea.
Kyle, our producer, Kyle, who was the one who called you a few minutes ago, he's the resident Coug, and I would say he stands for a lot of Coug. He's very indicative of a lot of the Cougs that we know here in Seattle. Kyle, okay. What do you think Kirk should be ready for?
Well, Leach has referenced Woodstock before, but everyone's got their clothes on. It could be like that. A little bit of a carnival feel, potentially, with some carny barkers and people going crazy out there. And just shoulder to shoulder, wall to wall, excitement.
I can't wait. What was Mike Leach's response, by the way, as the game day was coming to Washington State? Did he know about it? Does he know yet?
That's a good fair question. Yeah, I don't know if any of us know exactly what always gets filtered through to that gentleman on his time and his schedule. But Kirk is as excited as I know you guys are, and you've referenced this a number of years, and it was close a couple years ago, right? It was either going to be Wazoo or out to Philadelphia for the Temple game, and there were a lot of, I wouldn't say hurt feelings, but there was, man, I really wished it could have happened then. So when you guys get word, when did you get word officially that this was gonna happen?
As soon as the Washington-Oregon game ended, Leif Hitting, who ultimately makes the decision, texted me. And he and I, you know, from time to time, will text back and forth. And it was like, you know, it's a given. Like, even going into the games, we were like, if Oregon wins, we're going to go to Washington State. I think that's kind of how the feeling was internally among everybody on the show. And then when Oregon, that was a great game, by the way, Oregon and Washington, Oregon ended up finding a way to win. It was like, you know, I was in the middle, I think I was in the second or third quarter in the game, the Michigan-Wisconsin game, and I got a text saying, next week, finally doing it, heading to Pullman. So that was it. And then they told me after the show to kind of do a video to release the news. And I'm excited. You guys know the whole story about everybody watches game day today. They see thousands of signs and flags. And but when this started 15 years ago, there were like two flags, and it was always for the home team. And there weren't that many signs. I'm sorry, I'm out in the woods right now walking my dogs. Just hear some strange noises.
You're getting ready for Pullman, but, man. It's perfect.
But, yeah, the thing was we kept seeing this Washington State flag. It was like week after week, month after month, year after year. At first we were just kind of like, I think it was Chris Fowler who was really started to get kind of dialed into it, went out and actually talked to the folks and learned the story. That, you know, that these guys travel and they send the flag in a FedEx box. They find out where game day is going the next week, and it's the exact same flag, which blew me away. You know, the trap makes the trip all the way around, you know, wherever game day is, and representing the Coug Nation. And it just kind of, I think Rinaldi did a feature on it a few years ago, and it's just been a really cool story. And we always wanted desperately to get out there, and here we go. We're coming. So we're fired up. It's going to be, I got to believe it's going to be a pretty chaotic scene for 3 hours.
Yeah, what if you were to evaluate and rank some of the firsts, right? The first time you all went to Fargo, or the first time you went to James Madison, the first time you went into some of these different environments. And I don't know why I'm comparing Pullman to Fargo or there in Virginia. But when you go there for the first time, is there sometimes a unique, different energy?
Totally, yeah. Bobby, who drives the game day bus, you know, he'll pull into the town every week, wherever we're going. And, you know, you pull into Gainesville or Columbus or Austin or Tallahassee or, you know, Norman. Kind of people are excited, but we've been there and done that. You pull into Fargo, and it's the entire town is out there, you know, cheering on Bobby on a Wednesday, you know, or a Thursday when the bus pulls in. So it'll have a totally different feel, would be my guess, just based on the reaction about the announcement and that sort of thing. But yeah, it's a different feel.
What do you think of the Cougs? I mean, it's an interesting team this year. We did not think they were going to be as good as they've been. Gardner Minshew's been a revelation, and Mike Leach is kind of Mike Leach. So what do you think of this group?
Well, Mike Leach, you know, going back to his days at Texas Tech, you know, just when you think, okay, they're a non-factor, they're scoring 45 a game. And here they go again this year. He reloads his system kind of, I don't want to ever say it's an autopilot, but you guys know if he has a quarterback that can read it, he's going to spread it around, and make throws. He appears to have that. He's always going to have skill out at receiver. They understand their routes, the route combinations, the adjustments to the routes. And as long as he's got a gunslinger, he's got a chance. And so far, that's kind of what we've seen from him. Their defense, you know, last couple of years, their defense has gotten better and better. So lost a lot of big names off that defense a year ago, but playing much better last few years. So it's not like they just have to outscore people now.
Kirk Herbstreit with us, walking the dog in the woods, getting ready for the solitary, just beautiful country that
is Pullman. What kind of dog you have there, Kirk? What are you walking around with?
I got three golden retrievers.
Jeez, you got all three of them with you at once? That's a workout.
Yeah. It is, but they're different ages. So you have a two-year-old who acts like he's out of control, so
right.
He's on a leash. And then the other two, one's four and one's eight. And they just chase down the squirrels and have fun. So, yeah, I try to do it every day when I'm home.
So here's the other thing that you got to understand, Kirk, about the cougar that piped in there, Big Kyle, and in reference, you know, Pullman and everything about it. The other thing they do in Pullman is they're really sneaky, incredible fans that really know. Like, my Coug friends, like, they try to play it off. Like, oh, shucks, you know, well, we're the Coug. But they know every last detail. So they already somehow know your travel itinerary. You're flying in Friday, is that right? You got the boys' high school game. You're flying from Nashville to Pullman. Yeah. You're flying from Pullman to West Lafayette. How's all this happen?
Yeah, dude. Usually I leave Thursday morning, go to practice, meet with coaches on Friday morning, take responsibilities Friday. And then I have twins that are seniors and I have a sophomore, and all three are playing on the team. So it's kind of a unique year. And so I fly back in afternoons, typically, go to the game, and then I'll fly back right after the game, back to wherever game day is. This week, because it's a 5-hour flight, 4.5-hour flight to get out there, I'm not going to go Thursday, come back. I'm just going to go. We have a huge game this week, a rival game. The team that beat us in the state championship last year. So I'm not missing that game. I don't care where I don't care what game day is. It could be in Poland. I'm going to be at this game. So I'll be flying right after the game at about 10 o'clock Central Time. So I'll probably get out there 1 a.m. probably local time.
Yeah.
Sounds perfect. Then, that's actually when Pullman's just getting going. That's like the exact perfect time that you want to get to Pullman. Hey, you mentioned that you found out, Kirk, after the Washington-Oregon game and the way that went down. What do we make now of UW? I mean, this was supposed to be a year where this team could compete for a national title and at least be in the college football playoff. And with the second loss, that's now out. And now you're going to lose your quarterback, lose your star running back, lose one of your big guys on the defensive line. A lot of these secondary guys are going to move on. What do we make of where the Husky program is at in general?
Well, I'm a big fan of the program. I think everything you just mentioned, to me, the first thing that comes to mind is hold the rope. You know, you're going to have some guys. Anytime a team has national championship, conference championship, realistic goals, like in August, and those goals, all of a sudden, that narrative starts to get squashed. I've seen so many teams, so if you guys just lose control and all of a sudden they become a different team the last 4 or 5 weeks because they start thinking about the NFL, they start, we're no longer in the mix, and they lose their focus. And Chris Peterson is probably, other than Nick Saban, he probably pays attention to detail as well as anybody, and he'll make sure this team still is focused and about it, and what kind of injuries, what kind of goals might be gone. He'll get them locked in just because of who he is. But, you know, think about their losses. I mean, I know they're not playing. They haven't played great football. The injury to Adams affected the continuity up front. They just weren't quite the offense that I think we expected them to be. And yet they lost against Auburn, who I don't care that Auburn's starting to fall apart. That day they played a different Auburn team, and they played them basically in Auburn's backyard, and they competed. They competed. Red zone was obviously a big factor. Then the rivalry game, they go to Eugene and play against the Ducks, who, I don't know about you guys, but Mario Cristobal is turning that thing around in a hurry. As far as the culture and the physicality, and you got a quarterback, but they're a lot more than just that quarterback. Jim Leavitt does a good job on the defense. So you go in there and put some points up on the board and really earn a chance to win it. I don't think you can really look at their two losses and, sure, maybe the national championship and the playoff opportunity is not there, but it's not like they've had a terrible year. So I'm anxious to see what they do from here. Like I said at the beginning, maybe some of those goals are gone. Is there enough maturity on this team and enough leadership on this team to listen to Chris Peterson and his staff and still go out there and finish strong and still end up having a great year?
Well, Kirk, we appreciate it. Thanks thanks for taking a few minutes with us while walking the dogs.
It's impressive. Yeah, that's what you got to do time management-wise this season. It's a busy season of life for sure.
We'd like to see your ability to do a couple things at once. That's important, multitasking. And, you're going to have some time, man. This is going to be different, I promise. It's going to be a different experience for you.
It'll be pretty cool.
So enjoy it, and we'll talk to you again.
We are fired up and thankful for the opportunity to get out there and cannot wait to showcase Pullman and the fan base and show America what kind of fans they have. So we're fired up. Thanks for having me to let everybody know how excited game day is.
All right, there you go. College game day. It'll be Saturday morning from Pullman for the very first time. Kirk Herbstreit joining us there on the Venue Kings hotline.
Yeah, that's going to be unique. It's a little different if you kind of watch game day as I do on Saturday morning to get a chance to do that. Won't get as much this week because of the early kickoff that we have with TCU Oklahoma. But typically I'll wake up early, and when it's out west, like at Oregon or USC through the year, it's been to Seattle now a couple times, it's dark. Right, it kicks off at 7 a.m., so it's still sun rising, but it's going to be, I think, weather forecast-wise, absolutely stunning. And when they roll into town Wednesday and they start shooting Thursday and Friday, you are going to get, what name actually comes to mind? And maybe it's because of the passing of Paul Allen, too. The name that also comes to mind when I think of Washington State is Keith Jackson. I think of the games that Keith Jackson called. I think of those Ryan Leaf games in the 90s. I think of Keith Jackson's love affair with the wheat fields in Pullman and Eastern Washington that never left him, right? That was such a big, big part of everything that he was. And I bet you're going to feel some of Keith Jackson and some of the presence there as ESPN will really have a couple hours to showcase Washington State in a way that it never has been before. Are you okay with that, Kyle, by the way? I mean, you're going to get some fanfare. You're going to get some attention. You're going to get a lot of things that a bunch of Cougs like you and Jim don't necessarily always love. Yeah, you're kind of not into that.
But you make exceptions. I mean, this is something we've been clamoring for, so we can't now pull an about face.
And... Sure you can.
Why?
Why not?
What?
You do whatever you want. You do whatever you want. You can get mad about it if you want. Like, it's okay to admit if it's maybe not everything you thought it was going to be. You can admit that.
Why? I don't have that feeling. I'm trying to impose these feelings upon me.
I'm just kidding.
I'm more thinking about Keith Jackson still and Brock's emotional comments. And
yeah.
Washington State University. More affectionately, Old Wazoo. Nestled in the green and golden hills of eastern Washington. More than a campus, bigger than the hills, bigger than a state. It's a spirit, a feeling, carried by all those who touch it and are touched by it.
You know what? I'll just be totally transparent here. It's one of those days, just a little bit raw, and everything's out there. So, you know, it's unfiltered. I love how you try to get close to college football. I love that you've taken some steps here over the last decade to try to, like, appreciate it. But getting to know you as well as I have over these 10 years, and Kyle as well, and even Boy Howdy getting to know you, it's like this toes in the water, and there's some aspects of college football that you really do like, and then there's some of it that you just can't really, like, jump in and just dive in and be like, oh.
Mike, you're not a big pageantry guy.
Nope, not really. No, not big on pageantry. No.
And on top of it, it just was so, like, not part of your upbringing,
no,
right? And
zero.
I mean, sports was such a passion of it with the hockey with the Bruins and the Red Sox and in the football, and but just the college element, the pageantry of it, the parade of it, the generational history.
It's
going to
be a parade?
Yes. Oh. Yeah, all of it. I appreciate you trying to like dip in. And at times you did. Heck, when you were drunk over there 2 years ago,
I had a great time.
You were having the time of your life.
Absolutely. But I'm not waking up at 7 in the morning to watch some stupid TV show. Are you kidding me? You want me to wake up at 7 in the morning to watch a television show?
Yeah, only one
There's
of the
zero chance of that.
Only
happening.
One of the most kind of renowned sports shows, Emmy award winning.
I've never seen it, and I probably never will.
Don't say that.
Why?
Don't say that.
It's 7 in the morning.
You always make these big declarations, and then you end up having to walk them back.
Maybe I will. Yep. I said probably. I didn't say I definitely never will.
Speaking of one of the highlights of Pullman, Kyle,
I'm sure it's great. Lee Corso does something with a mascot or something.
He puts a hat on.
So wacky.
He either puts the duck gun or the cougar.
Oh, it's going to be so wacky.
So, Kyle, do you remember 2 years ago when we did game day? What do we call it?
That would be lame day.
When we did lame day over
and
there.
And people thought we were making fun of the Cougs. Nope. We were really trying to make fun of ourselves.
Right.
That was a kind of a mess.
Do you remember just how much Salk just loved it? He loved everything about it. Loved walking the streets.
It was great. I love Pullman.
Was it Stella's that had the calzone?
It was awesome.
Yeah,
I'd love to go back
South
this weekend.
Fork Public House. We were eating those Cougar Gold jalapeno.
And at halftime, let me just share the story one more time. At halftime, I walked out of the broadcast booth. Right? You and you were in the stands, Kyle. And you were great with the crew. We had to last, you know, put on the show, and then you guys got a chance to kind of meet the crew. You had dinner with the shoe. And
with the shoe was great.
And I walk out at halftime of the press box, and there's Salk. I see him over there. And he's kind of leaning up against the wall. I'm like, what's up, bro? He's like, oh, I'm doing great. What a great time. I'm like, hey, have you made it down to the truck? You know, you're going to go down and sit in the production truck. And
nope.
And you're like, nope. I'm like, why not? I'm way too drunk.
You were like, drinking what? Bullet bourbon off the bottle.
Is that what we were doing?
Is that right?
I don't remember that, but it's definitely a possibility.
You were so warm. You were so friendly.
Hey, I made it to the end of the night. Kyle did not. Let me be very clear. I finished that night sitting outside on a little beach chair outside of Kyle's trailer, hanging out with his wife and his friends, because Kyle passed out in his trailer. That's right. So I don't want
to
hear it.
With a broken heart. Singing
I made
the
it.
Blues.
That was the night. What was the kid's name? Eric Powell?
Yeah.
That poor kid missed that kick.
Yeah,
I would love to go back out this weekend. I think the environment is great. I like going to the games. I've enjoyed going to Husky games. I enjoyed when we went out to the Cougar game. Brock, even going down to the USC games with you a few years ago. Going to the games is great. Yep. I just, look, I'm not going to, it's 6 a.m., by the way. It's not even 7, it's 6.
Yep.
I'm not waking up at 6 a.m. to watch TV.
Yeah, I mean, I know some of the other challenge is like in the professional world, you win or you're out. You make the playoffs or you're done. It's just a bottom line. There's like no silver lining. There's no gray area. There's no perception reality. You either win and keep your jobs and try to win the next year, or you lose and you get fired and you're out and this next guy's through. College is so different. And that's why Chris Peterson yesterday wears the T-shirt he wears to the press conference. You know, stay positive. That's why Chris Peterson knows that there's still, you know, as Herbie said, 5 big games here where you can very much still, you know, win your conference. You could very much still go to a Rose Bowl. You could still very much, you know, recruit and spin this story forward to recruit, which you have to do, which is the lifeblood of all of these programs. So there's still immense story to be written, even if the bottom line national championship is out for the Huskies in 2018. You know, and I know that's a different.
I'm sorry, man, and maybe it makes me a bad college sports fan. But when I hear you and Kirk say, "Well, you know, we can see and he can do this," and Auburn might not be good now, but they were good then. Well, who cares? You lost.
Yeah.
Whatever, man. Well, Auburn was so good then. So. They've shown since then they're not that good, and you lost.
Yep.
Oh, but Oregon, I mean, you know, well, unfortunately, you know, it's on you to be better than them.
And by the way,
I know Oregon's good, and they got a good quarterback, and their coach seems like he's moving it in the right direction. But guess what? Right now, USC is down. Right now, Stanford's not that great. This is your window of opportunity. Yep. Eventually, I'm going to go ahead and make a bold prediction. Bear with me. USC's going to be good again. It might not be this year, might not be next year, but I'm going to make a bold prediction that in the next 5 or 6 years, USC is going to be awfully good again, because guess what? That's what happens. That's the history of college football. Yep. USC will be back. This is a golden opportunity, and you've had one for the last 3 years. With Oregon down and with USC down and with Stanford good, this was your opportunity over the last few years,
and you've
squandered it.
You get to a playoff ahead of your final four teams
and the last
ahead of anybody
and the
else.
Last 2 years, you haven't done what you needed to do. You got there ahead of where you were supposed to be, and the last 2 years, Brock, have been squanders. Last year with Vita Vea and with Pettis and with Jake and with Gaskin and with everybody else on that team to not make the college football playoff or not have the opportunity for a Rose Bowl last year is a squander. And the same is true this year, unfortunately, because
I would stop you there. The same is not entirely true for this year. In the next 5 weeks, we'll write a lot of that script. If they win the next 5 games, and I really do believe Oregon's going to stumble on the road somewhere. And if Washington wins the next 5 and they get to 10-2 and they play, I don't know, Utah or USC in the Pac-12 title game and they win that game and get to 11-2 and actually play in a Rose Bowl, something they've not been able to do, could not play in the Rose Bowl last year as it was one of the playoff games. They ultimately get to the Fiesta. So, you know, I don't think it is totally, yes, you did not win a national championship. You didn't. So in that vein, it was disappointing. You know how many national championships you've won? In all of these years, you won one in 1991. I think history tells you
getting to the college football playoff was the goal here. They had an opportunity the last 2 years to get to that Final Four, and that would have been successful.
Yep.
And unfortunately, they weren't able to get it done the last 2 years. All right, coming up next, Brock, will shift gears because it was a really sad day yesterday here in Seattle as Paul Allen passes away. It leaves the Seahawks in a bit of doubt in terms of where things now go and stand moving forward. We'll discuss the future of the reason we're all here talking about this next. I'm Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
All right, Pete Carroll joins us in 1 hour. Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Sad moment yesterday as we all learned of the death of Paul Allen yesterday afternoon. Great job by Danny David Moore, who had a really, I thought, community conversation and brought a lot of different listeners into it and heard from a lot of people about what Paul Allen meant to them. And Brock, you and I spent some time on it this morning. We'll come back to that conversation here in a little bit. But as you think about the impact that Paul had on specifically the Seahawks, it is enormous. Steve Rabel on with Danny David Moore yesterday, Cut 7. Spoke to just how important he made the Seahawks, not just locally or even nationally, but internationally.
In many ways, that is one of the reasons why you and I saw what we saw just yesterday. I mean, it literally 24 hours ago in London, the kind of response, the kind of following that the Seahawks have today with the 12s literally will go all over the world to watch these guys play. And I think in large measure it's because Paul and the partnership that he started and asked for and received with this team that makes it so special to all of those who follow the team and all of us who have been, you know, lucky enough to work with and for the team all these years.
It's an interesting conversation about ownership because Paul Allen did not get into owning the Seahawks because he loved football. He got into owning the Trailblazers because he loved basketball, mm-hmm. and that's what he wanted to do. Yeah. He wanted to own a basketball team and be a part of the NBA community because basketball was his first love as a sports fan. Makes complete sense. If I understand the story, he got into the ownership of the Seahawks because of his love for Seattle. Not because of his love for football necessarily, not that he didn't like football.
Yeah, and he grew up watching Husky football games with his dad and obviously went to Pullman as well.
But his goal wasn't to become owner of a football team. He wanted to help Seattle because there was the threat that this team was going to be moving, a very real threat, that this team would be moving to Los Angeles. And so he got into it from a community standpoint, as we talked about before, not just from a passion for football standpoint. I wonder if that's a positive. I wonder if that's a great way to own a football team or any other type of team, because it takes a little of the emotion out, but also always keeps the fans as the focus of why you're in this thing to begin with.
Yeah.
He didn't need the money.
Yeah.
He wasn't passionately meddling and getting involved because he thought he knew more than the president or the GM or the coach or anybody else who was running football operations. He always seemed to think about it from a fan perspective and said, hey, if the reason I'm going to own this thing is because the people of Seattle needed an owner and they needed me to step up, I better always keep them first and foremost. And maybe that should be the message to all owners out there.
I wanted to be part of keeping the Seahawks in Seattle long term, and what my hopes are for the team and this community, and what I see as the critical next steps in this process.
Now, Brock, this team's not going anywhere. They have a stadium that is going to keep them housed for years and years to come. They have a local brand, a national brand, an international brand that makes them one of the integral parts of the city. The Seahawks are not going anywhere. But who is going to be their next owner? Yeah. And once we know that, what does the future for this team look like?
Yeah, and from what I could gather, and just having some of these kind of cursory conversations yesterday, which are obviously difficult and you don't even want to have, you know, you don't even want to think about that, is it's not going to be just really simple. I think that was probably my biggest takeaway. And the NFL just does not allow it to stay in a trust, in a Paul Allen trust. They want an active owner. They want that engagement. They want 32 people in a co-op, and whether they're there at every meeting, and Paul certainly wasn't, and sent Todd Lewicki, and then later Peter McLaughlin, I think, was a real face. And he was there when it mattered. And I love some of the stories from Andrew Brandt and others yesterday that when he walked into that co-op, of 31 other pretty egotistical guys, the room got real quiet. The temperature changed, and he was always what he's been, inquisitive, humble, curious. But when he spoke, it really resonated. And that's going to, I think, be one of the most challenging aspects of it, Mike. Who is it? Who has some of that connection and that lifeblood here? Who went to the University of Washington and sat there in the rain on Saturdays with his dad and had those moments and said, no, Mike Holmgren, we're not going to have a covered stadium. We're not going to have a retractable roof. I want to have a cantilevered stance like I remember at Husky Stadium, where the noise stays in the building. And how can we do it just enough and differently that people won't look at CenturyLink Field and see Husky Stadium, but it will absolutely have the same effect in those stands that come out over the top, and they keep the 70,000 nuts of and fans of football and all that passion right in that building. And that's why there's no covered stadium, because that was some of his vision. That's why it is as loud as any stadium out there, because he wanted, you know, to kind of reinforce it and have that background. And so how do you find that person
You probably connection? Don't, and you certainly don't find that person with $20 billion. Here are the options, as far as I understand them. Paul does not have a wife or children, and so there is no obvious heir. His sister Jody is really the one family member he had. And we heard John Clayton tell us this morning there's the possibility that the team could go to her, and there have been some reports of that she may end up being the next owner of the Seahawks. Hawks. There have also been other reports questioning whether she's interested in being the owner of the Hawks, and then others wondering whether or not it actually is even set up to go to her.
Or in this co-op, you know, those 31 other folks have a say as
That's
well.
Right. So I don't know what happens. I don't know what she would be like as an owner if she indeed does want to own the team. I don't know whether she would spend the same resources that Paul did to make this team unique and primo in every single facet of what they do. Maybe she will, maybe she won't. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know what her interest is in football. I don't know what her interest is in the city of Seattle and the community element that was so important to her brother Paul. Yeah. So that's option one, and that option is at the very least murky because we don't know the answer to a lot of those questions right now. Option number two, I guess, is that the team could be sold. The last valuation I've seen was roughly $2.6 billion. I think there's a pretty good chance the team is worth more than that, maybe even close to $3 billion based on the sale of the Clippers a few years ago for two. But let's say it's somewhere between
$2.5 billion.
Yep. There are not a lot of individuals that are going to take on that kind of cost. They just don't have the money.
Yep.
How many people are worth upwards of $15, $20 billion?
There's that whale. He's down. He bought that basketball team. There's two of his $18 billion. Mm-hmm. That his last name happens to start with a B as well. You know, he also made a lot of his money at Microsoft, and that being obviously Mr. Ballmer, who would have, I think, in a similar vein, so many of these kind of touch points.
And maybe that would be an option. Maybe Steve Ballmer would want to get interested and invested in this club of the NFL. I don't know. It's not going to be Bill Gates. It's not going to be Jeff Bezos. It's not going to be some of these big names that have Seattle connections that are worth that kind of money. Gates has never shown any interest in this whatsoever.
Chris Hansen doesn't have this type of money, right?
No. Chris Hansen, close to that kind of money.
It is. I guess, Mike, and just listening to this for the last 6 or 7 minutes, Danny's words yesterday just strike me again and again. And the number of times in 3 hours with Jim and Dave yesterday that said, we're lucky. Been really fortunate. I'll use the word fortunate just to not steal his. He said lucky a number of times, and he's right. So unbelievably fortunate to have a guy here that was one of us. It's a parochial place, right? I think anybody from the outside learns that pretty quickly. Like this place, you know, cares about itself from within and its background and its history. And it's a melting pot, and it's brought a lot of other people in. But when you've had somebody as committed as he is to making it just world class in every way, the best of the best, first class, and attracting the best talent because of it, man, we've had a run here for 22 years unlike anything that we've ever had in this city.
Yeah.
Pretty remarkable.
Well, we'll see where it goes next, Brock. I remain really interested and curious, just like Paul was. If that was the thing that seems to stand out about him was his curiosity, I'm very curious to see what happens here with the ownership of this team. And when Pete Carroll comes in here in about 40 minutes, you know, who does he report to right now? Is it Jody for now? Is it just Chuck Arnold and the presidency? I'm sure they've set up the plans for this. We just don't know the answer. So we'll be interested to talk to Pete about what's going on with the team and Paul Allen, in addition to, of course, where they are at in terms of the football team, because they're playing some really good football, man, the last few weeks, and excited to talk to Pete about what they did in London. We'll do that coming up at 9:30. Coming up next, though, Brock, we got a little good news, bad news, no news, and a disaster scenario taking shape for one man. Next on Brock and Salk.
Good news. Yeah! Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
Brock and Salk here, 710 ESPN Seattle. Pete Carroll in 45 minutes, and looking forward to talking to Pete. Obviously a lot to discuss after a great win in London and a difficult day for the entire organization, city, and community yesterday. We'll do that coming up at 9:30. Right now, what's in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
Chris Peterson says he wants a do-over for his decision not to run another play at the end of the UW Oregon.
Yeah, I'm going to say good news on that. It was a number of years ago, maybe it was year one or year two, that he had some real end-of-game challenges and kind of got questioned on it, and I thought was a little defensive at that time, and I think in this case, he was pretty honest. He had to do it over, we would run another play. Put that kicker a little bit closer. Trust the quarterback a little bit more. Be aggressive. You know, you study, I think, some of the analytics of this, and I'm seeing this more and more, Mike, in college football than I ever have before. In fact, last week on our broadcast, we spent a lot of time talking to Kyle Whittingham, and he has an analytics guy that stands right next to him during the game. And they've got a book, and it makes about 25 decisions a game. And he really trusts it. He takes the emotion out of it, kind of reads into that, and they've got answers before, you know, some of those questions even come up from a clock management and a game situation. And yeah, I think as Chris has had a couple days to evaluate it, he would do it over, and he should have come out that way. And I think it's good news.
Yeah, good news. I mean, unfortunately, it's no news because there aren't actual do-overs in sports, but it's glad to see that he's looking at it that way. Look, I love Chris Peterson. I think he's a really smart guy, a great leader, but these are the types of situations that are part of the job of being a coach, and they're the ones he's got to get right. He's gotten, unfortunately, too many of them wrong over the years, and maybe he should invest in something like that. I think a lot of coaches should. I mean, taking some of the emotion out and having somebody who can only concentrate on this, it is such a vital part of winning and losing in both college and professional football.
Yeah.
I don't know why more teams.
You know, I studied why we lost that canoe battle, sink the canoe battle, yeah. And do you realize they had all boats had four guys and gals in the boats, and they had one of theirs that just stabilized. Didn't pick up a bucket, didn't do anything other than to stabilize the canoe for the other three. Sometimes you need that. You need to lean on others.
Good news, bad
valuable
news, no
learned.
News.
Very valuable.
Yeah.
Thank you for analyzing.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Legendary WSU broadcaster Bob Robertson is retiring after 44 seasons with WSU.
Globe is called back, ran out of the pocket, throws the ball right side, caught. It is a touchdown, Washington State!
Sir.
Ricky Galvin!
Yeah, I don't really know that this fits into any of the categories. I'm sorry. I'm going to pass on giving it a good news, bad news, or no news. It's not any of them. It's obviously time at 89 years old, and he's ready to step away. So I'm happy for him that he gets to move on to the next portion of his life. It's sad, of course, because he's called so many of these Cougar games in a row and an integral part of that community and that broadcast. And anytime an announcer is able to create a bond between themselves and the community and the teams and the fans that they represent, that's an incredible accomplishment. And so kudos to him. Congratulations on an incredible career.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. Congratulatory news that it's been a run unlike anybody else for five decades. And I hope Game Day has a feature. They've got a 3-hour window and opportunity. I hope there is some feature because Bob has been integral. You know, I mentioned Keith Jackson earlier. I could have just as easily put Bob Robertson. That's been the lifeblood. You know, the program over there has been his lifeblood and his connection to so many. I think for so many years, and in that way, congratulatory news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Angels are looking for a new manager, and they're conducting a 2-hour written exam for all candidates.
What does that even look like? What is that?
Well, you know,
I'm going to say that's good news outside the box. It's creative. It's kind of fun. I think it's where a lot of this sport and analytics and baseball brings it out more than any other game. So in that way, good creative, good news.
Yeah, I think it's kind of no news. I think a lot of teams have done things like this over the last few years, and not just in the last couple. I mean, I remember Terry Francona being hired for the first time in Boston and going through an extensive interview where they put him in all these different situations and put stuff on a video screen, and he had to react to them. So this is just sort of the next step in the process of where that's going. It's too bad they didn't make Mike Socha do that. He would have failed in every fashion.
This is how the young Billy Haywood became manager of the Twins in the big league. Lou kind of gave him, hey, what about, you know, runner on first and third, two outs, what do you do here? And Billy aced the test, and he became the skipper.
Sometimes that's all you need.
14 years old.
Yeah, pretty good.
Pretty impressive.
Maybe the Angels will do that.
We'll see.
What's your niece?
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Brewers won Game 3. They take a 2-1 series lead over the Dodgers in the NLCS.
I mean, I think it's good news because I think it's entertaining to see a new blood find its way possibly into the World Series. But if you are the commissioner of baseball right now, the idea of Astros Brewers is not appetizing for you at all. So I would be thinking about finding a way to get Angel Hernandez or some other awful umpire out to that NLCS in a hurry and have them start making some bad calls in favor of the Dodgers.
Yeah, again, I guess in the same vein as my last answer, good news, man. Milwaukee's done it differently. Milwaukee's not some blue blood program. They didn't have inherent advantages over, say, the Seattle Mariners or anything. It's not as if they've been building this for 10 years. They got a couple of the right pieces. They made some tremendous moves this offseason. And Yelich and Lorenzo Cain have been difference makers. They made right moves at the trade deadline. They caught fire when you need to down the stretch of this season. And I think they showed a little bit of a blueprint maybe for this team in this town that has a few pieces, but certainly needs to add a few more. And I love the way they're going about it. I love the way that there's almost a collegial feel to the way they play baseball. They're hyper-aggressive in their decision-making. Their skipper brought his longtime baseball manager, pulled him out of college baseball, and they push the envelope. And for all of that, good news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Ohio State defensive end Nick Bosa, a projected top five pick in the draft, is withdrawing from school to focus on rehabbing injury and getting ready for the NFL.
Interesting. For us here in Seattle, that's no news. For the Buckeyes, that's bad news.
What about
I think
for
in
the
their
future of college football?
Yeah, that's a good question, Kyle.
It's like, does this become a trend?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, we're feeling there's some shifting sands in college football. We're seeing it with the redshirt rule. We're seeing it with transfers. We're seeing, we're seeing it with questions that are asked and players that are certainly, you know, being more empowered than they've ever been before. So while that makes me a little bit nervous, I'll be quite honest with you. There's some nerve-wracking news there. Ultimately, here in Seattle, that's no news.
It's no news. College football is just full of hypocrisy, and this is yet another example of it. The idea that Nick Bosa is a college student is laughable. So the fact that he's withdrawing is no news.
We saw this start a couple years ago with guys like Christian McCaffrey saying they wouldn't play in the bowl game.
Yep.
And now it's like week six.
Yep.
No thanks.
Who was it? Was it Myles Garrett the guy who's now in Houston, the other pass rusher.
Jadeveon Clowney.
Jadeveon Clowney, yeah. Right? Where there's, maybe he'll just won't even just sit out. Why? The only thing you can do is hurt your draft stock if you play. So why even bother playing?
Yeah, I don't think that this is all of a sudden going to ignite some massive change. I think there's a few players that are in unique circumstances, like all those names that you just referenced.
But they do point out some of the hypocrisy of the whole thing. And that's not college football still has a lot of great advantages and reasons to watch. And the fact that there's hypocrisy at the center of it doesn't end
hypocrisy
the ability
because
to enjoy it.
You're not a student athlete?
Just all of it. I mean, it's built on a lot of hypocrisy in terms of the amount of money that's in it. And are we really caring about, is it the college and the pageantry, or is it a just pathway to the NFL.
Yeah.
It's trying to be a lot of things
it's
to a lot of people.
I wouldn't use that word. I think it's some shifting sands, and there's more individual power, player power than there's been in the past, but not for the majority. Not for the majority that go there and love being student athletes and getting their degree. And
it's funny, the majority don't seem to make it into good news, bad news. No news, though.
No,
they
don't.
It's always the Nick Bosas who are withdrawing from school. All right, that's good news, bad news. As we said, Pete Carroll about 35 minutes from now. Going to be an interesting one. Really excited to talk to the coach today. Before we do it, though, Brock was walking down memory lane after a really sad afternoon, and it led him to a couple of very, I think, important conclusions. He'll give those next here on Brock and Salk.